Those are the numbers that matter on Your Money Matters on what was a wild day on the markets. I don't even want to look at the futures yet, and maybe we shouldn't, just to keep our own blood pressure in check. I did want to start with one piece of good news. Mary Vandeveld, I heard you say that PayPal is where you got paid for your Facebook payment, and I hadn't gotten paid yet. And yeah. I was like, well, I'll just go check. That's where it was.
Woohoo! Well, didn't they notify you that on your
email? I thought I had
email?
No, I got no email about it. Well, actually, really? I should double check before I say that definitively.
And it was really funny because within 5 minutes, my son texted me and said, I just got my PayPal. And now my daughter just 5 minutes ago got her a PayPal.
Oh, okay. So if you haven't got one yet and you're like, maybe I moved or maybe I changed bank accounts, which is possible, go into PayPal. Maybe you used your PayPal. I want to thank me of 2020 to have that foresight to do PayPal. Maybe it was just the easiest one to do.
Yeah.
And that's maybe they just had to put in your password or something.
I love PayPal. Done.
Anyways, $397. Probably should invest it in the markets here today. If I'm smart, that's maybe what I would do. We'll find out. Scott Nations joins us now. He is the author of The Anxious Investor. Boy, that's appealing today. As well as A History of the United States and Five Crashes. Hope this isn't another one. Scott's also the president of Nations Indexes, the world's leading independent developer of volatility indexes. Scott, thanks for hopping on today with us.
I'm happy to do it. Unfortunately, there's not much good news today.
Yeah, what's your general reaction before we get to weather and traffic on what you saw on the market, what was driving it down, and just your interpretation of where we are right now?
Well, you just gave the rundown of the increase in energy prices, and that was a big part of it. The day started off badly when Target announced that they had missed earnings expectations. They said that fuel and freight costs were going to be $1 billion higher in 2022 than they had expected. And so that leads everybody to believe, every investor to believe, that retail is going to have a tough time, and they decided to sell.
And yesterday's retail numbers aside, I mean, that's how quickly people could ignore government numbers that they got yesterday that were pretty good?
Well, pretty good, but we know inflation is a problem. We know that all of the retailers are going to try and absorb, and Target said this, are going to try and absorb some of these extra costs rather than pass them on. That's good for shoppers, but it's bad for the bottom line. It's bad for shareholders. And we saw that in Target today. We saw it in Walmart yesterday.
Yeah. I got a text from the 630. If you're worried about what's going on in the market, then you shouldn't be in the market. I think I can keep my wits about me and stay in the market and keep on investing like you suggest, Scott, and still be nervous, right? That's a human nature thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We invest for all the right reasons because it's important to us. And just because we worry about it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be in the market. And in fact, the important thing to remember is to invest, to continue to invest. And over the long run, the market will do all the heavy lifting and will more than compensate for the risk that you take. That's why the market is where it is versus where it was, say, 20 or 30 years ago.
Right, for sure. Scott, I got to put you on hold. We got to take a quick break. More with Scott Nations. If you have questions, 312-981-7200. Or if you are totally chill about this, text me or call me with your secret. Weather and traffic, Mary, how are we looking today? You've probably heard by now, we're celebrating our 100th anniversary tomorrow. It's going to be a huge day. Everyone wear your WGN gear. Snap us photos. I heard John Williams talking about that. 312-981-7200. We want to see you in your WGN gear. And, of course, we've got the show on Channel 9. It'll be right after us tomorrow night. 100th documentary we put together looking at the station's past and present. And, oh, by the way, if you are, I'm not in the Chicago area market, I can't watch, I'm so bummed. Well, guess what? Starting on Friday the 20th, just 2 days from now, you'll be able to watch it online at WGNradio.com/100. And later on in this show, I'll tease our big guests for tomorrow. We're going to be participating as well. Even though we've only been around for 4 months, we're still celebrating our 100 years here on WGN Radio. All right, Scott Nations, author of The Anxious Investor, Mastering the Mental Game of Investing. I have a hypothesis, Scott, I want to run by you, okay?
I'm ready to hear.
Okay, so in my view, there's a lot of right answers about what you can do with your money. It just kind of depends on how you feel, how well you can sleep at night, and, you know, but there's on the other extremes, there are some very wrong answers. Do you think it's really important for people to identify, hey, look, don't do this or that on the extremes and then try and find a middle ground that just makes you feel okay?
I think that's a great solution. We know that that humans fall for behavioral biases when it comes to investing. We do it because we're human. The problem is, John, and you know this, we've talked about it, none of the behavioral biases that come out when it comes to investing help long-term returns. Every one of the, for example, the 15 I talk about in The Anxious Investor, every single one of them hurts returns. And so I think the best thing that an investor can do is to invest and keep investing, don't stop investing, but understand how those biases might throw a monkey wrench into your plans and might cause you to do something, as you mentioned, at the very bottom, fail at the very bottom.
Right.
Because you think, I can't take it anymore.
Right. Bailing at the bottom, right? I mean, that's the thing that a lot of people are maybe, I'm not saying we're at the bottom yet. I don't know where the bottom is, but maybe, you know, they're thinking, oh gosh, maybe they got into the game late, right? Maybe they just started a couple months ago or last year when all they saw was green and now they're going to pull out. It's like about the worst time to do it. I also feel like there are people out there that think, and maybe this is the confidence bias, Scott, that we all have. I think some people think, I'm either A, going to time the bottom, or, you know, that 6-month emergency fund, I'm good at my job. I'm going to put that in right now because it's going to do well. And look, you might end up right, but it doesn't mean you need to make drastic steps. I think we need to check those biases too.
I think you're absolutely right. And one of the biases I talk about is the overreaction bias that many of us fall for. And what happens is we see a horrible day like today, or we see a horrible number like the profit number that Target released this morning, and we overreact to that one ephemeral number rather than pay attention to what has happened in the long run. Well, Target ended up today having the worst day it's had since the Black Monday crash in 1987.
Wow.
But are you going to invest because of what, it's thinking about what Target did today and what it did in 1987, or are you going to invest given the fact that it's, you know, been a solid performer over time, that the stock market in general has been a solid performer over time? The point is, don't pay attention to a single day, because if you can remember what happened in the market on a single day, then it's certainly not normal.
Right.
And you want to invest for what's normal, not what is memorable.
Yeah. Also, remember yesterday when we were up 2%. I mean, we don't have to go that far back in history to find an example, maybe not quite as low as today was low, but to find other abnormal highs as well. I think that a lot of people just, you know, you mentioned those biases. Is the best course of action to look at your revenue that you're bringing in, looking at all your income, setting up your plan, and if you can do automated things to keep that plan on the tracks, you kind of do it, and you do your best to ignore the noise.
If you can put it on autopilot, if you can put your investing on autopilot, then that is one way to take the human interaction and the human bias out of your plan. And that way you don't freelance, and you don't make the sorts of mistakes that we make when we get under pressure. As an example, a quick example, some of the biggest outflows of the last 4 decades occurred in February and March of 2009. Biggest outflows in traditional equity mutual funds happened in February, March of 2009, which was the absolute bottom. And it's because people were freelancing. They thought, I got to get out because it's going to drop a bunch more. Well, we know you can't time the market. We know you can't do that. History has shown that. So why are you going to try?
Right. Yeah, I just think it's like if you have that 401k and you set your investments for it, that's great. If you have a little extra money you put in every couple of weeks when you get that paycheck coming in and you have it set, you're going to, you know, whatever, pick your account that you're using, your E-Trade, whatever it is, and you're going to buy some ETFs, just don't tinker with that. If you know that's in your budget and you have your emergency fund saved, you kind of just got to let those things roll. I'm not saying you never look at it and you never adjust, because that's important, but I just feel like that's going to help you out in the long run. If anything, it just kind of prevents your biases from kicking in.
Right. And if you have a long enough time frame, a reasonably long time frame, say 15 years, then wouldn't you want to buy stocks when they're on sale like they are right now?
Right.
The very famous mutual fund manager from the 1970s and 80s, Peter Lynch, he said the secret to making money into stocks is to not get scared out of them. And that makes a whole lot of sense. And another one that I love, Warren Buffett famously said, the stock market is an instrument for moving wealth from the impatient to the patient. Well, let's be patient and let's get some of that wealth.
Yeah, for sure. Any last pieces of advice for people? Hey, how about read The Anxious Investor? I think that's a great way to do it. You tell three really great stories. Well, they're not great to the people that unfortunately lost all their money in them, about some really cool parts of our history in the markets and examine those biases from them. Where can people pick up that book, Scott?
They can pick it up at any bookstore or Amazon online, a bunch of other online outlets. You know, it was fun to write. I hope it's fun to read, and I hope people learn something from it.
For sure. Hey, Scott, do you mind taking one quick question? I think we have time for one.
Sure.
All right. Do you mind locking Scott in there already and so I don't hang up on him? That's always important, not to hang up on the guests. I want to go to Jeff. Jeff, what's your question or comment?
Yeah, I want to know what's going on with all the money the Fed has been putting in buying really questionable things.
You mean like the $9 trillion that they've spent, if I got that number correct?
Yeah, on things that really shouldn't have been bought.
All right, let's put Jeff on hold. Scott, any thought about the Fed's buying sheet? I don't know if you agree with it that they shouldn't or shouldn't have. What is, are they, they're trying to ease that off, right?
They are trying to ease it off, and the Fed responded correctly in 2008 and 2009. They lowered interest rates dramatically because we were all worried about a recession, and then they did the same thing in 2020 when we were all worried about COVID. The problem is they kept rates too low for too long, and inflation got out of control. Part of their plan was they were buying a bunch of bonds, and Jeff is probably not wrong. They probably bought some bonds that they shouldn't have, and that was they did that in another effort to lower interest rates. Well, they kept them, again, they kept rates too low for too long. And now we're paying the price because the result of that is inflation. To Jeff's specific question, they bought some stuff they shouldn't have, most likely some mortgage-backed securities and some commercial bonds and corporate bonds. And now they're going to have to sell that. They're going to have to sell it off slowly. And the goal is sell it off slowly so you don't disrupt the market.
And I think that's their plan. We'll see how it plays out. Scott, always good to talk to you. We'll do it again, okay?
Thanks so much.
ScottNations.com. All right, more after this on WGN. I'm going to have to send one over to Mark Hamrick out on the East Coast. Mark, you want a WGN beer?
Oh, absolutely. Congratulations. 100 years. That's a pretty darn good run.
Yeah, we'll certainly take it. All the celebration starts tomorrow. Not much celebrating on the market today, Mark. Let's talk about what the numbers we got yesterday, the retail numbers. And obviously today we told a different story for how Target was doing. But what was your breakdown of the reports that we got yesterday?
Well, in terms of the monthly retail sales figure, I think it was largely in line with expectations. We knew coming in that auto sales would be a positive contributor to the month, and the gasoline sales would be a negative because gasoline prices, distant memory, last month were lower, and of course, unfortunately, they've since rebounded. On a year-over-year basis, retail sales are up in almost equal measure to the increase that we've seen in the consumer price index, a little more than 8%. So that tells you much of what you need to know about how you are getting this lift in retail sales is because things cost more. And so we had some earnings reports over the past couple of days from Walmart and Target. And their profitability suffered because of inflation. They seem to be doing okay on sales, but their inventory management may be an issue right now because not only is what consumers want to buy shifting, but what they are buying is shifting. And some of that's about inflation. Some of it's about the so-called reopening of the economy where, you're spending more on services than you were before because, you know, you're essentially free to do that. And so, overhanging all this is, of course, concern about the possibility of a recession or at least a growth scare. And obviously, inflation, which has been both higher and more persistent than most people saw coming.
The number that we got yesterday, I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying, is even though it is up from last year, down a little bit from last month, but in line with the expectation, that 0.9%, that represents dollars spent by consumers. So when you're saying that it's in line with what inflation is. It just seems to be that we're buying roughly about the same amount of stuff. It just costs more now.
Yeah, and of course, you're getting less for your money, right? So that's a dissatisfying situation for consumers and business alike. And just think about it. You know, let's say one has $1,000 to spend, and if in the past somebody was spending $150 of that on gasoline, now they're having to spend, you know, two times that. That money has to come from somewhere. And so consumer savings is being liquidated to some degree here. The savings rate is well below pre-pandemic levels. And more people are turning to credit. And, you know, those are things that are not elegant. You know, those are things that are detrimental to the economic outlook. And, you know, we're fans of credit cards as tools, but we don't want people to have to rely on them to the extent that they can't pay off their debt on a monthly basis. And I'm fearful that that's sort of the brew that another kind of brew that we're getting into here.
I have been accused many times of wearing rose-colored contacts, and I do look at the number, though, and say, well, at least we're still buying things, and that we seem to be buying it through the inflationary prices. I say at least because, you know, I hope that the businesses are still doing well. Am I right at that at all?
Well, sure. I mean, the economy hasn't ground to a halt, and, you know, we've had some experiences with that now over the past couple of decades, first during the great financial crisis, when we literally saw monthly declines in auto sales of 30% and 40%, and essentially we had sales of a number of different kinds slowing very sharply when lockdowns began in the early part of the pandemic. But those were extraordinary experiences, and everyone who's listening went through the last one, and some people experienced it during the great financial crisis, meaning not everyone who's listening may have been alive,
right,
or at least a mature consumer at that point. You know, one thing about economic crises or downturns or whatever the experience is, they are not always identical to the previous experience. And what we're experiencing right now, of course, number one is inflation at the highest level in 40 years. The job market is still remarkably strong, and that's great for workers, but a headache for employers and enterprises. And so that's probably, you know, a top contributor to the positive dynamic that you are describing there. But when consumers are surveyed about the way they feel about the economy, it's as if the job market doesn't even enter their mind, because inflation is by far top of mind. And so one can sort of understand that because it's something that's inescapable, mm-hmm, for anybody who is consuming.
You see it every day,
but
right.
Yeah, that's right. And there's another part of it. Fossil fuel and climate change aside for the moment, people hate spending money on gasoline, and even more hate it when it costs more, right? Because that's money down the drain of the car, so to speak. So I do tend to think that has an outsized negative impact on consumer sentiment. So we don't know how we're going to get through this. I mean, we will get through it, but we don't know what it's going to look like on the other side. And when you have the likes of Fed Chairman Jerome Powell saying, you know, there's more pain to come, you know, he's right, because
yeah,
he's looking to essentially dampen demand, and you're already seeing that in the housing market, and obviously the impacts on the stock market are going to have an impact on consumer sentiment, as well as the willingness of some people to spend money, even if they're not fully invested in the stock market.
For sure. Mark, I'm going to put you on hold. I got a couple more questions, okay?
Sure.
Oh, by the way, we're starting our celebrations nice and bright and early tomorrow morning for our 100th birthday. Dean Richards will be broadcasting live on the TV side from WGN Radio Studios during the WGN TV morning news starting at 5 a.m. You think Super Joe is cool being on TV? See Joe and Haley and everyone else live on Channel 9. And then, of course, the celebrations will continue all day long. Mark Hamrick joins us, Bankrate senior economic analyst. Continue our conversation. I wanted to focus on consumer sentiment that you brought up, Mark, a moment ago. Is there a point where that doesn't matter in the long run for the economy if people don't like the way things feel, but they still spend a lot of money? Like, or do those two opposites eventually meet in the middle somewhere where the feeling can actually start to eventually drag down and change their performance?
Well, it's a great question, and we're all very often sort of trying to ponder what, where that intersection occurs and where it might diverge. And, you know, ultimately, before the break, we were talking about we don't know how this resolves itself, right? And so with respect to inflation, there's a saying that the cure for high prices is high prices, meaning, you know, eventually people basically have to fold their cards to some degree with their spending. They just cannot contend with inflation that continues to escalate or persist. And so I think that's probably the way to look at this, is that something has to resolve. And so either spending does get pared back more significantly, and then there is the risk of a recession occurring essentially with that. The irony or the conundrum in the first quarter, of course, was with, although GDP was negative, and that's sort of part of the layman's definition, not the technical definition of the recipe for a recession, the layman's definition being two consecutive quarters for contraction. Again, that's not the definition that people actually use, mm-hmm. but that's sort of your elementary school.
That's what I learned in elementary school. Yeah.
Yeah. But the irony there is that consumer and business spending were just fine in the first quarter with some other more technical factors that detracted. But I think that, you know, if inflation were to be resolved tomorrow, which is obviously impossible, if the supply chain disruptions were to be rectified, if the war in Ukraine ended, there was a peace declared there, if China's lockdowns ended and gasoline would somehow return to its previous level, then we wouldn't have to worry about these things. But unfortunately, there's just no way that all those things can happen.
That's all we need, Mark. Come on.
Yeah.
Easy peasy.
Yeah, it's like, you know, being from Kansas, I know we do need to get, the princess here to allow us to click our heels. But even so, that's unlikely as well.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm asking is, if we keep spending the way we have, and I know that there's already signs that will not happen, but relatively, if people, you know, had relied on their savings enough, is it possible? And maybe this is really rosy. The idea that, you know, we keep on spending, maybe curtail it a little bit, but there's still a need for all these employees to work at these places, and then inflation through the markets through the Fed's action comes down, that there is a soft landing out of all of this? Or is that just too tight of a runway to land on?
Well, it's both, meaning that it can happen, but a lot of positive things need to develop for that to materialize. And so,
see the previous list,
I've been attending. Yeah, we're right, but even, or not even all those things, but even some things that aren't quite so complicated. Among the greatest gifts that Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell has is his ability to communicate, and part of that is because he's a lawyer, not an economist.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's made it a priority to speak directly to the American people, and whether one listens to him in a sit down kind of an interview or at the news conferences, as I have over these many years now, going back to Bernanke and Yellen, who were not as straightforward as he is, because they are super smart economists.
Right.
He has said very plainly that he could see the possibility of having a soft landing, but he doesn't want everybody to bet the house on that, so to speak.
And so buckle up still, no matter what.
Well, I mean, I think people are already doing that.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's all they can really be asked to do. And different people are going to have different abilities to cope. If you don't have to drive too much, that's a good thing. But most people don't have that luxury.
Right, exactly. You find ways you can to save and buckle up, and hopefully we manage our way through it. We won't know till we're out of it. Mark, thanks for joining us. Always appreciate your time.
Thank you, John. It's a real pleasure, and what a wonderful opportunity, while you're celebrating your anniversary, so raising that virtual glass to WGN.
Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate it. Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst. All right, let's take a break, then I'm going to tell you all about our exciting show tomorrow on WGN.